This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Say yes to Pure Leaf tea and free gas for a year only at True North Convenience Stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
That was the voice of Will Compton on his podcast via FanDuel, and he thinks Harold Landry, good fit, a minion for Mike Vrabel, as the Patriots collect what seems to be good locker room guys, culture guys. We see your phone calls lining up, 617-779-7937. Before we jump back to the phone lines, Fitzy, you think it's weird? So I brought up Bentley as a guy who could be, at the very least, out of reps. I don't even know, out of a job, out of a captaincy. Kyle Duggar.
Why do you think that's the case, dude? Because, I mean, he's a good football player.
He's fine.
He's good. I think he's a good football player. What is he now, like six?
I don't think he's good for what they want to be. Athletic, penetrating, speedier. Like, he's the opposite of all of that.
I think they may want, they may want somebody, like, it very well could be a case of, like, hey, listen, guy, you got game left. It doesn't fit what we're trying to do.
But does this make a weird dynamic? And so we hear David Andrews rumors that maybe he's not going to be with the team this year.
Yeah,
it just feels like leadership-wise, Kyle Duggar and Jabril Peppers on the back end of the defense. I wonder, is there almost, because I hear Will Compton call Harold Landry a minion for Vrabel, and you bring in guys that have ties to either Vrabel or Terrell Williams on the defensive side of the ball. Is there going to be that weird, like, feeling out period in, you know, off-season workouts and then into mini camps and OTAs where it's like, who are the leaders? Like, I used to be a leader here, but you seem like you're kind of more tied in to the guy who's the boss now. I don't know. I just feel like there might be an interesting dynamic of leadership that'll have to evolve and develop there.
Because all of your previous leaders, locker room guys, oh yeah, guys, Super Bowl champions are gone. Like, if David Andrews and Jonathan Jones are gone, that's it. There's no more Super Bowl winning guys on the roster at this point. So now you are really, really rebooting and kind of starting from scratch all over again. Now, there are people that Bill Belichick would gladly have on a football team remaining from his days as head coach here. But yeah, this is a Mike Vrabel styled reboot. And I don't think that's going to create some sort of like loyalty based, like, who are his real minions? Is this the Vrabel mob? And you have to, like, get in line with the way he wants business done or get the hell out of town. I don't think there's going to be, like, intimidation or scare tactics deployed. I think he just wants to work with guys that he knows he can get through to and coach. And those are his new leaders. Like, the guys you've seen today, do not be surprised if, like, three of the guys that have been signed today are part of the new captaincy, if you will, on the 2025 roster.
I think there's probably a pretty good chance of that, and I am assuming Drake May will be a captain, so you're kind of filling out your leadership council.
So this needs to be brought up. So this just happened a few minutes ago. I'm sure it'll get addressed later on in trending sports news as well, but I think it merits an immediate discussion. What have we been talking about as priority number one for years, let alone now this offseason, especially for Drake May? Obviously, it's starting left tackle. So am I correct in seeing that the Houston Texans just traded Laremy Tunsil?
to the Washington Commanders, the team that already proved you can turn around faster.
Yes, that you can turn around in one season and go from 4-13 to 12-5 with elite quarterback play, good coaching, and a solid offseason.
Now they want to go to the Super Bowl.
Who'd they get? They got Kinlaw today?
Yes.
Okay, that's good for them. He's probably a step up over Bobby Wagner if they hold on to him. And now they get one of the best left tackles in football?
For, quote, picks.
Picks.
Just picks.
What picks? If I see it's like a third and a fifth, or like a third this year that can be a two next year, I'm going to want to punch the sun.
That optimism that Fitzy had last segment seems to be dissipating.
I'm optimistic about the defensive side of the ball. At no point have I told you I'm optimistic about the offense yet. I said they have to turn their attention to it.
Right.
But I'm super optimistic about the defense. I'm just going to be
mad. If it was 1985, we'd be awesome.
Yeah, exactly. We're kind of lacking Willie Gault, Jim McMahon, Walter Payton. The offense was pretty good on that team, too. But if the best, one of the best left tackles available was out there and the Pats didn't get in, or the God.
Dan Ball, you have the return on that trade?
Yes, sir, from your favorite reporter, Ian Rappaport.
Oh, crap.
All right, finalizing a deal, 5-time Pro Bowler Laramie Tunsil to the Commanders, a second rounder and a fourth rounder going back to the Texans, plus a third rounder this year, and then Houston sends a fourth rounder in addition to Tunsil. So 2-3-4 in exchange for Tunsil and a four.
You worded that weirdly.
I was reading directly off a tweet.
You said a second, a fourth, and a third.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you say a second, a third, and a fourth?
I was organizing Ian Rappaport's tweet on the fly. So honestly, credit to you, Andy. You're right with his nickname, because that tweet was crap.
That was crap. And that makes me also wonder, is it right? When it's weirdly worded like that, it makes me wonder if it's right, unless they're in different years. But Fitzy, the point is still accurate. It's a lot to give up. Don't get me wrong. A second, a third, and a fourth is a lot to give up, if that is the return for Laramie
Tunsil.
That's
a going for it style move.
And I'm fine with that, because they're ready to go for it, right? They were in the NFC title game. They have their franchise quarterback. They have their franchise receiver. They think they're good enough. They have their defensive-minded coach. They've made some moves. They moved on from Jonathan Allen, correct? The defensive lineman.
Yes. He was out interviewing elsewhere today, yes.
Interviewing? I hope he wore a suit and brought his resume.
Maybe he got it at Milton's. All right, here's now Diana Rossini has reworded it. Here's what we have.
Oh boy,
the Texans are trading
too.
Pro Bowl, the Commanders. Yeah, Washington receives left tackle Laramie Tunsil and a 2025 fourth round pick from Houston. Houston receives this year's third round and this year's seventh from the Commanders, a 2026 second and fourth. So four picks to the Houston Texans, one pick and a damn good player back to the Commanders.
Yes, Dan Ball.
Let it be known on behalf of Andy Hart that Ian Rappaport did tweet it incorrectly, and his tweet is now showing as edited.
Thank you.
And it's still wrong because he doesn't have the seventh rounder. So, that is all.
Wow. Now instead of calling him crap sheet, can we call him crap tweet?
Can we call him Diana Rossini's bitch? Because she just made him that by beating him to the punch. 617-779-7937. Back to the phone lines. And I'm very intrigued by this run of Mike's, so I'm going to stick with it. Mike in the car. What are your thoughts on what the Patriots are doing in free agency?
You know, the sheer number of mics that call your show just indicates the lack of creativity of the parents of the 70s and 80s. But you know what? I'm happy to be the tie-breaking mic, and there's only one Uber driver that calls your show, so I'm happy to hold that title. But here's the thing. I'm fine with the way things are going so far. Yes, I like offense just like everybody else, but this team has a lot of needs. How do you eat an elephant, boys? You do it one bite at a time. You can't address everything all at once, and you have to start somewhere. People are acting like, oh, they lost out on DK Metcalf. Metcalf said he didn't want to come here. Oh, they lost out on Godwin. No, he stayed with the team that he's known his whole career. Oh, they lost out on Stanley. No, he signed an extension with the team. So these are players that weren't even available to begin with. Just because someone's rumored to be a target for the Patriots, it doesn't mean that they were ever a realistic possibility. So who have they actually gone after and lost out on offense?
Godwin.
We don't know,
Godwin.
But none of those guys.
Godwin.
Yeah, but like I said, he stayed with the team that he knows. You guys were saying it yourselves. You already said it. He stayed with a team that he's familiar with and took less money to stay there. So, it's a case of maybe they didn't offer enough for the suck tax, Andy, as you would put it. But the point is, they've made some good signings to address needs. Maybe not the top needs, but they're still needs.
All right, thanks for the call, Mike. The one thing I'd push back against a little bit is the DK Metcalf thing. Oh, he said he didn't want to come here. He said he wanted to go to a warm weather team with quarterback stability.
That's and he went because he wanted to go somewhere where he could burn cash. That's what he meant.
Yeah. So don't tell me he said he didn't want to come here. I said it earlier. Myles Garrett said he didn't want to play for Cleveland anymore. And then they handed him a ridiculous amount of money, and he said, I love Cleveland. The money is the... Exactly, Stiz. We should be playing that all show long, in and out of every break, because that is the big story in the National Football League. Money. So I don't really want to hear that DK Metcalf didn't want to come here. They offered him an extension with his current deal. They gave him $132 million in new money. What if you had given him $145 million in new money and made that new deal $163 million or whatever it would have been? You telling me he would have said no? You offer a better pick to Seattle. Seattle wins, he wins. So don't tell me they couldn't have had DK Metcalf. I think if they really wanted DK Metcalf, they could have got him. You know why I think they didn't want him, Fitzy? Is what we were just talking about. I don't think they think, and this
he's
is pure,
a good dude.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to say a bad dude, but a bad presence in the locker room, a bad magnet in the locker room for a young offense, a young team that is trying to build something. Maybe in 3 years, if they have three or four new players and whatever, it'd be a different situation. Yes, Dan Ball.
I also don't see him as a fit with the coaching staff. The DK Metcalf, who eats multiple bags of candy and then one dinner at the end of the night, and just his general mindset with the way Mike Vrabel seems to go about things, same with McDaniels. I don't know how great the personality fit would have been with them.
Yeah, it may not have worked. And honestly, he's not as good a player as we act. Like, the more I looked at his numbers, I was like, huh. He's better in my mind than he is on the stat sheet. And I know there was some changes at quarterback and different things and coordinator and everything in Seattle. But it's not like DK Metcalf rolls out of bed and gives you 1,500 yards and 12 touchdowns every year. That's not exactly what he's been in the National Football League. 617-779-7937. Let's go back to the phone lines. We'll go to Joe in Melrose. Joe, what do you think of the Patriots' moves in free agency?
Melrose Joe.
Hey, guys. Yeah, no, I like the moves. I think they let the market come to them. They took the players that were available. I think I would rather had Josh Sweat instead of Howard Landry. But no, I think the one that stung over the weekend was Ronnie Stanley, because I think they kind of held hostage by the left tackle position. So they have to take it a left tackle at four, or they can trade down a little bit. But it's like one of those positions that gets pushed up in the draft. For the receiver, they probably have to take receiver at 38. But I mean, I like Tom Curran's plan or Phil Perry's plan, both of them. Trade a fifth round pick for Jacoby Myers and maybe get Cooper Kupp in here and then try to, you know, do something with 38. Maybe they can trade for AJ Brown with 38 and off him a boatload of money.
Thanks for the call, Joe. This Jacoby
cost more than 38 for AJ Brown, guys.
I don't know what it's going to cost. I don't know why they would trade him. That makes no sense to me if you're the Philadelphia Eagles. Although that theory I posed the other day that they wanted Myles Garrett would have been a good one. But guess what? Myles Garrett no longer available. So you have no need to free up cap space to get an elite defensive player. I also, the Jacoby Myers thing. Why are the Raiders trading Jacoby Myers?
I don't know why they would want to get rid of him, especially when Geno Smith doesn't have like the same volume of targets that he had up in Seattle.
Yeah, I don't get it. People keep throwing Jacoby Myers out there, and I've actually entertained the discussion. You and I have talked about it. We love Jacoby Myers. Do I think he'd be great? And if you had any concerns about a guy's attitude and leadership, I'd take Jacoby Myers in a heartbeat. But I was thinking about this driving home the other night. The Raiders are trading for a quarterback. The Raiders have Pete Carroll telling anyone who will listen they want to win sooner, not later. And yet they're going to trade their receiver? Why? Like, that makes no sense to me. He's not asking for a new $100 million contract and stamping his feet in the aisle at the grocery store. Jacoby Myers should stay with the Raiders and see what they can be, you know, in Las Vegas. 617-779-7937. WEEI Afternoons. Up next, we're going to transition a little bit. There was a fun basketball game, an expensive basketball game at the Garden over the weekend. You might have heard about it. It was Lakers-Celtics. And the Celtics got the big dub because their big dogs played really, really well. Celtics Lakers up next here on WE.
The PGA Tour is all systems go, and so is the new show Early Wedge on the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Sportsline experts Sia Nejad, Mike McClure, and Eric Cohen alongside myself, Rick Gaiman, Patrick McDonald, and Jason Sobel. Five times per week, the Early Wedge provides the best information for DFS lineups, outright selections, and so much more. Follow and listen to Early Wedge in the Early Edge feed on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
EI Afternoons. That was the voice of Big Deuce, Jason Tatum, following the Celtics' 111-101 defeat of the Los Angeles Lakers at the Garden on Saturday night. Fitzy, did that game live up to the hype and the expectations?
Not really.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
No, it was not the most thrilling game. I personally enjoyed watching Wednesday night's game when White and Pritchard went for 84 than I did the Saturday Night Lakers affair. And I have to think that anybody that got in the building, whether it was original face or someone crazy enough to pay $20,000 for a ticket, probably felt the same. Though I'm sure the energy was insanely off the charts to start the game. By the end, it was sort of like, oh, one of these teams is markedly better than the other one, and that's the Celtics.
Absolutely, and it ended up being close. The Celtics pulled away in the third quarter. The Lakers only scored 13 points in the third quarter, and then scored 34 in the fourth to outscore the Celtics by 10 in the final period. But LeBron James left with a groin injury. Luka Doncic got kicked in the face by Al Horford while he was celebrating a dunk and hanging on the rim. My guy, Jaylen Brown, had another nice game to tag team with Jason Tatum. Have you noticed of late it happens in these big games that those two are becoming sort of what they're supposed to be? Like, you can pencil them in for the 30-30 against the Cavs, the 30-30 against the Lakers. I will be penciling them in and maybe betting them in for the 30-30 potentially against OKC on Wednesday night, which, by the way, WEEI Afternoons will be down by the Garden at Scores leading into that big game, latest huge game for the Celtics. So come on down, say hello to Fitzy, myself, Ted Johnson, do a little pre-gaming for the big game. But I agree with you. This, like, for example, the Cavs game, I thought was a much more enjoyable game wire to wire, even though the Celtics ended up losing. Whereas this game started out that way. It was a Larry Bird 33 all after the first quarter. And I was like, are we in line for another one of these? And then it just kind of, the game kind of petered out. The Celtics are the better team, as you said.
Yeah, the game totally did peter out. By the fourth quarter, it felt like, it kind of felt like, all right, there's going to be some sort of Lakers run that's going to cut it to a margin that the game doesn't represent how lopsided the game has really been or how one-sided it's been. And yeah, what did they get it down to? 7 with like 3 minutes to go, but then Tatum got the big kick out 3 and that put it back into double digits and it was over at that point. But yeah, like Luka didn't look as dynamic as he had in the weeks leading up to it. LeBron, like with some sort of groin injury, and like I said, the flopstrionics and the completely like European soccer style drama and acting all over the court as well. Like the Lakers definitely sort of, I don't know, watching them, did you think like this is the team that's won like 8 or 9 in a row and has been bottle rocketing to the top of the Western Conference?
No, I
agree with Jason Tatum. The NBA is a much better place when the Lakers and the Celtics have rivalry and are both good teams. Lakers are good, but they're not great by any stretch.
No, but they're the second best in the West, or they were. Actually, I haven't checked the standings lately.
Say Denver takes them out in 6.
And I'm fine with that. There's a bunch of teams I can talk myself in you know, high-class problem, wanting to play in the finals if I'm the Boston Celtics. From a fan's perspective, I think the Lakers are fun. OKC is fun. Denver is fun. Golden State would be fun. There's 4 teams right there that I can talk myself into really enjoying those NBA finals. One thing that was interesting to me is this was a, from a Celtics perspective, you know, they have the injuries a little bit. The Porzingis thing, I still don't get. Can anybody explain to me what the hell's going on with Porzingis, a non-COVID illness?
Can someone explain to me what's going on with Willier Abreu? I mean, crossing sports, pardon me, but like you got a non-COVID illness that's taken out Porzingis. At least it's not like some sort of sheath on a ligament or a tendon or something. So no surgery is going to be required. But like back to Red Sox, Willier Abreu, they say some sort of like gastro illness is going to keep him out past opening day because of all the weight he's lost? Like,
did Greg give him the norovirus?
But that's like a week tops. Like, you're sick for like 3 days, and then you just got to put all the weight you lost, rehydrate, and put all the weight you lost back on. Like,
it's also gone through the rest of Red Sox camp. Roman Anthony lost 10 pounds, I think, from dealing with it. And Casas was described as MIA by his roommate. Nobody knew where he was. He was just very sick.
10 pounds, jeez.
Yeah. Funny thing is, they got a long season to go. I want Porzingis to start rounding into form here as we approach the postseason.
That dude is unlucky, by the way.
Oh, absolutely.
As much as he's injury prone, I think he's also just a bit unlucky.
Because this is not ideal, but Fitzy's right. It's better than if it was, he's got tendonitis in his knee or he's got
the normal stuff.
Some whatever. But it's also not ideal that they continue. Because I remember thinking, just like one of those NBA injury report eye rolls. Oh, non-COVID. Like, you see these things all the time in the NBA. And now he's been out for, what are we on, 2 weeks here? Feels like forever that he hasn't played.
5 straight and 6 of 7 was the number from our guy Turp.
And they've won most of those games. So in a lot of ways, Andy, like, okay, good. I mean, not that I want to see him come back, somebody who's as thin as he is come back, you know, looking gaunt or emaciated, but I guess if there's going to have to be a time. Look, they're winning games without him, so if anything, he's not putting pressure on, not the feet, the knees, the ligaments. Like, rest him up. Get him better. Like, rehydrate him. Put him in the lab for a little while longer and get him ready for the games that really count, starting in about, God, now that it's sunlight till after 7 o'clock, like, basketball playoffs really must only be like a month away.
The weather is great. I am in love with that I don't have to be depressed every time I drive home because it's been dark for like 4 hours. Drew Holiday, speaking of ligaments and tendons, Drew Holiday was back on the court. The old, what's it called? Hammer?
Mallet finger.
Mallet finger. I was going to call it the hammer finger, and I was like, that doesn't sound right. That sounds more dirty than what we've made the mallet finger sound like. So he has seemed no worse for the wear. I mean, he didn't have a big game, but he was out there. I didn't see him. You know how anytime anyone returns from something, they like, especially in this day and age, the camera will catch a close-up of, oh, my God, is Drew Holiday bending his finger? Is he moving his hand funny? The Joe Burrow, he can't even pick up a Gatorade bottle. How's he supposed to throw the football? And then he goes out and throws for a gazillion yards and has a great year. I didn't notice any Drew Holiday worse for the wear, so to speak.
No, it wasn't like, oh, man. It's like when somebody's playing with some sort of, like, a bad ankle or a knee or something. Like, oh, man, just get him out of there. He's no good. He's a risk to himself and the team right now. He's only setting himself and the squad back. Like, there was nothing about his game Saturday night that said he's a hindrance to the team's efforts to win that game or going forward. So it was good to see him. I mean, he's running just fine. I mean, I couldn't see anything different about his shooting motion or like any technique deployed by him otherwise, but good to get him back out there. You know, one of the things you have to sort of consider is when these guys miss, look, they're world-class athletes and they're paid to take good care of their bodies. But when they start missing like 6, 8, 10 games, guys, the conditioning kind of goes down there a little bit. So if anything, just getting some run for Drew Holiday is probably great right now. He's another one of these guys, considering his age, Andy, and how many miles he put on the vehicle last year with a playoff run and the Olympics, where load management has been a priority. So, again, it looks like the positive returns for him going forward.
And Big Al, beyond kicking Luka on his dunk, I thought had a great game on the defensive end of the floor, where it seemed like the Lakers kept trying to isolate him. And then there was a few times LeBron's one-on-one with him. I'm like, oh, boy, this isn't going to go well for Al. He's going to break his ankles. He's going to look like an old man. And he really didn't. He looked really competitive out there. He looked more competitive than Luka did at times as the Celtics tried to go after Luka and his defensive inefficiencies or whatever you want to call it at times. But I thought this was an Al Horford game where it reminds you that in the postseason, he's not necessarily an aging liability. Sometimes he's just a good player on a great team.
He's a different animal. Wow, Luka had 34 in that game. That's like, that feels like the quietest 34 in the history of Luka Doncic.
Yeah, and those of us that may have bet plus 20 points for LeBron, Luka, Tatum, and Brown, cha-ching, just like the NFL, baby. Cashin', baby.
All right. Nicely done.
And that was before LeBron got hurt, thank God.
I snuck that in there, under the wire. But like,
yes, Dan Ball.
Andy, 18. You're a LeBron hate guy, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Do you believe that the groin injury was legit, or was it just an I'm-done-playing injury?
Oh, no, I think it was legit.
You do?
I don't think, yeah, no. I didn't get that. Is that a thing?
I saw it floating around on social media, yes.
Oh, he was just getting out of the game. If the Lakers were within 4 points, he would have played that game out.
Well, but that's not necessarily the same thing either. Like, you can have a tweak, and if it's a critical part of the game, maybe play through it because you're trying to steal a win, whereas...
51, everything is tweaked.
Right, well, he's 40, everything is tweaked, even though it doesn't look it. Like, his physique, I'm sorry. Can we just be honest? Like, we're not going to say anything, but look at his physique.
He spends $1 million a year on his body, right?
I bet you he spends more than that.
Yeah.
That's the on-the-book stuff. I want to see the second book.
Derrick Henry.
You know how in Shawshank there's a second book? I want to see LeBron's second book where he tells you how much he spends on his body. That's the book I want to see.
Wait, listen, hey, a little TB12 can go a long way, guy. You never know.
Yeah. Shadiness everywhere. Shadiness. Well,
hey, listen, he's not going to come out like Mo Vaughn and say that he did some things that he wasn't proud of. There's no Mitchell.
Not now. He's not
basketball.
Maybe in 20 years, like Mo Vaughn, he will.
You think some shipments meant for Ashley Manning are ending up at LeBron's house?
In my opinion, do I think that? Yes, 100%, 100%. 502 bad gateway. I've always questioned LeBron. I'm sorry. I question a lot of the NBA guys. Because my biggest question is? Who was the last NBA guy to test positive for steroids, performance-enhancing drugs?
I have no idea.
You know what that tells me? They don't want to catch anybody.
And I don't think they care.
They don't. And I'm fine with that. I'm with Canseco. I'd love to go back to 1998 and just see bombs galore. That was as exciting as baseball's ever been. But if you're going to pretend you care about these things, at least catch somebody every once in a while. It's like everybody drives 85, but every once in a while they pull somebody over.
Someone
on the highway.
Someone gets pulled over. Oh, right. I was just trying to keep up with the flow of traffic. Yeah, well, the flow of traffic is supposed to be going 65, not 85. What about everybody else?
That's just to send a message. Now everybody knows at least somebody got pulled over at one point for doing one speed. No one in the NBA gets caught. Yes, Diz.
I believe just over a year ago, NBA suspends Tristan Thompson after he tests positive for performance enhancers.
Tristan
25 game suspension.
Wow. He was trying to get the youth back, huh? That didn't work. Okay, so there's one. I usually say name three on those so somebody like you can't be a wise ass and just come up with one name and prove me wrong immediately.
Here's an overall basketball question I have for you before we possibly transition into anything else. Do you know how many games are left on the Celtics schedule?
18.
18, correct. 18 games.
I guessed.
After Wednesday's game?
The quiz was Diz all over again.
We should revisit that.
Oh, let's not.
I know Rich Keefe has like a clamp on week in review, but that was one hell of a performance by me. Stiz, you were saying? I mean, Fitzy, you were saying?
I was just going to let that one sit out there for a little while.
I'll be honest, I would have accused myself of cheating.
Yes, are you taking performance-enhancing drugs?
No, but when I nailed Rob Ninkovich's 225 at the Combine...
That was as lucky... Andy, that was 27 feet out with a blindfold on at the carnival to win a giant stuffy to impress your new girlfriend.
Except I would even question, can he see through the blindfold?
Right. Was it A, Atlanta? B, Indy? C, Tampa?
Well, Indy, not a state.
I just want to remind you.
I still don't know who's dumber. You for saying states or me for skipping to the B option that was a city and skipping right over the A option that was also a city.
All three of them.
They were all cities, and I go, Indy's not a state. No kidding, dumbass.
At least it sort of sounds like it is, like Atlanta's the capital of Georgia. It's big enough to be a state, bigger than a greater population than a lot of states. My basketball-related question was, do you really care about any more games, or can we just fast forward to the basketball playoffs now? Like, this is the problem. This is when an 82-game slate, like, starts to slog out a little bit.
Well, after the OKC Celtics game, then we could fast forward, because I think that's one more game. We talked about this four-game stretch here, right? Mm-hmm. It was Cleveland. It was the Lakers. It was Denver.
The Nugs and OKC, yeah.
And they are now 2-1. In the three games they've played, there's one more game to go. I would like to see them go 3-1, but I think this is a good measuring stick as they build up. And don't tell me Jason Tatum isn't building toward the postseason. He has been building for a little while now. I think Jaylen Brown. I don't know if that knee feels better that he's been complaining about, but it feels like they are elevating their leadership or their sort of I don't know, hold on the Celtics. And on the game in general the other night, do you know they only had three people play on the bench? They only got 9 bench points. Like, that was a playoff-caliber game. Their starters all played 30. Drew Holiday was their lowest starter with 35 minutes. Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum both played over 40. That had a
they
little.
They wanted that game.
Yeah, that was a little playoff feel to it. I think there was some. Jason Tatum played the first a ton of minutes. I think the whole first quarter and then into the second before he took a break. So that had a playoff feel. They are building towards the playoff, but you're right, Fitzy. After Wednesday night, when everybody's going to come down to scores and see us, then you kind of just have filler games to get to, because they're not even chasing the one seed. They're not going to get the one seed. They're going to stay in the two spot, hopefully.
Just protect the two spot at all costs. Just stay where you are.
Assuming nothing bad happens, they are 5.5 games up on the Knicks, so it would have to be pretty bad to lose 5.5 games over the final 18 games of the regular season. So, yeah, we're kind of playing meaningless basketball for now, not everybody. Obviously, those teams down at the bottom of the standings and play-in games and seedings and things of that nature. But from the perspective of OKC, Celtics, Cleveland, those are all teams that are probably like, yeah, what was that movie with Adam Sandler with the remote control? You could fast forward.
Click.
Click.
Classic.
If they could click, they would click forward into the postseason.
Did you just call Click a classic?
Yeah. Oh my God. I'm trying to think.
I was reading an AFI list the other day of the top 100 movies, and right after It's a Wonderful Life, it was Click.
Who plays God in that movie?
Probably Morgan Freeman.
Is it? I don't remember.
I think Christopher Walken's in it and has a great scene.
I remembered the movie, and I remember kind of liking the movie.
I could be wrong.
Not sure I ever would have said classic when somebody brought up Click. I don't think that would be my first reaction to the movie.
Nope. Christopher Walken was your God.
Yeah, that's right.
In that movie. But we all know that there isn't one.
Oh, wow.
He's been doing this at least once a week now.
I thought we try to avoid politics and religion on this show. We throw little snarky lines out there, but that's going to piss people off. Now everybody's angry.
It's just a dead inside comment. It's a throwaway. It's a throwaway comment. I mean, if the Patriots after Super Bowl 42, you want to tell me that there's a higher power?
You want to know what else pissed people off? We did a whole show on it on Friday. The trade of Brad Marchand to the Florida Panthers, anywhere but Florida. Well, Brad Marchand is boots on the ground in Florida. He spoke to the media today at Panthers practice. We're going to have Brad Marchand's first comments in a Panthers uniform. That's up next here on WEEI Afternoons.
It's razor thin.
That is former Boston Bruins legend Brad Marchand in Florida with his new Panthers teammates, fresh off of Friday's trade that rocked Bruins Nation, especially when it came in conjunction with all the other moves. And then the Bruins went out on Saturday and got a 4-0 victory. And I don't really know what to make of that, not going to lie to you.
I'm still super mad at myself for not laying a piece of change on that game, because that felt like the most predictable. Sure, now they'll go out and play their best all-around complete hockey game of the season. Swayman with the shutout, that spectacular stick save late in the game. They were flying, buzzing up and down and around the ice, just caught Tampa completely off guard. Like, it's the kind of game where you could say, like, yeah, boys, you won that one for Marchie. Or you could turn around and say, like, well, where the hell was this all season? Because if you did more of this, then Marchand would still be in a Bruins uniform, and you guys would be chasing the postseason in black and gold together.
There was definitely a hint to that, and it was definitely for a team that we've talked about. I think we talked about it with Ted on Friday. We were searching for points where they, like, had a bump, and it was like, post-Montgomery, did you get a bump? Did you not get a – they definitely got a Saturday bump. I don't know how far it goes from all the trades. And it's funny because it ties into – we, unfortunately, on our show, didn't get to hear Don Sweeney talk on Friday because he delayed his ass for, like, 2 hours into the Christian Arcan show. But when I listened to him, I don't know if you caught it, Fitzy. There was one point there where he was talking about defense, and basically – teams buying in on defense and his team not really buying in this year on defense. And he said something like, you look at Edmonton last year, they bought in on defense, and where did it take them? Took them to the Cup Finals. And I do think from a management perspective and probably a coaching perspective, including one coach who's now in St. Louis and one coach who's still here for at least a few more games, I think there is a question of the sort of to take my line from youth coaching, energy, effort, and attitude that this Bruins team brought to the table this year. I think they still believed they were talented enough to be a better hockey team, and it all petered out for whatever reason. I think Don Sweeney thinks it's effort, but it is interesting that Marchand, there's been a lot of sort of reports out there. How'd it go on? You know, he had the meeting in person face-to-face last week, and he thought they would be able to reach an agreement and all these things. And you'd think he's soured on Don Sweeney, right? You'd think our idea of him re-signing should be dead and buried, right? No chance he's coming back. They traded him to the Panthers. He wanted to go to the Panthers. That dream is dead, right? He hates Don Sweeney, hates the Bruins, and has moved on. Is that accurate?
I don't see if hate feels like such a strong word. Like, I can see him being disappointed in how things have gone. Disappointed in the way this season went. Disappointed in negotiations. I don't think that like, this doesn't feel like there would be like real animus. Like, there would be no hardcore enmity between Brad Marchand, Cam Neely, Don Sweeney, etc. You can not want to invite them over for dinner, but I highly doubt that there's strong hate between the two.
That's worse than like mad though. Like when your mom would say like, I'm not angry. I'm just disappointed.
Disappointed.
I'm like, ugh.
But yeah, and they're both disappointed. But it's interesting because as Brad Marchand continued to talk in Florida, he talked about Don Sweeney, and this made me think that the possibility of reuniting with Don Sweeney is not dead.
Something we had talked about previously, but we weren't. And at that point, very tough decisions have to be made. And the one thing that I always respect, I told Cam Sweeney this, is they have a job to do, and they have to make the best decisions for the team. And I completely understand where the decisions need to be made. It sometimes they work against you, but that's why, you know, I believe Sweeney is one of, if not the best general managers in the league. I watched him for a very long time. Excel at his job, and for those who are in the organization and know the effort that he puts in every day.
That is Brad Marchand getting more choked up talking about Don Sweeney than he did just talking about the Bruins in the first part of the answer.
Yeah, he's on the verge of tears in that.
He had to stop and collect himself a couple times in there, and all these... There's a lot of Bruins fans that we've taken calls. Wow, you fired Montgomery, you're blowing up the roster. Maybe it's time for Sweeney to go. Sweeney's the problem. Sweeney's terrible.
Mm-hmm.
That's Brad Marchand, who he just traded, saying Don Sweeney is one of, if not the best general manager in hockey, and getting choked up while he says it. I thought that was eye-opening right there. And I don't really know what to make of it other than he genuinely feels that way.
Don Sweeney or the Brad Marchand? Because Brad, I don't think Brad Marchand's putting on a sell there or anything like that. That's great if they have that relationship. If he really feels badly that things have gone the way that they've gone this year, good for him. I mean, it's sad to see that they had to go, but at least he appreciates the fact that he knows that this was a difficult decision for Don Sweeney to make as well. Like, look, I don't think Marchand's going to come back to the Bruins. Case anyone listens to that, I don't think he's coming.
He's coming back.
Nope.
He's coming back.
Harry and the Hendersons. Harry's been released into the forest. Go where you belong. Go somewhere else. Win.
You don't get emotion like that just everywhere. He goes down there. He wins a cup with Florida. And then he's like, where do I really want to play for the next 3 years? Who do I want to play for? Good people, great people. He gets choked up again, and he signs a below-market deal with Don Sweeney.
No, woo! I'm with Fitzy. I think he's emotional like that because he knows he's not coming back. No.
Yeah, this is it. Like, he's going to go finish his career elsewhere. Like, look at all the graphics and the mock-ups and the edits and the highlight packages and the hashtags and all the, you know, Brad Marchand loving. And it's done. Like, what's he going to do? Come back at age 37, 38 for the victory lap?
Yeah.
He'll go somewhere. No.
Where he wants to be. It's when they put you out to pasture. You want to be in a nice pasture. They don't put horses out to pasture on, like, a concrete, you know, field where it's hot and crappy. They put them out by a nice tree with some nice grass, a place they want to be. Boston is the pasture for Brad Marchand. Do you buy that? No.
No, I'm not buying that.
I, that interview, though, was one of the more eye-opening things I can remember seeing. I didn't expect that. When he got all choked up about Sweeney in particular, the guy who just sent him packing, the guy who seemingly he's been butting heads with, right? They couldn't reach a contract extension. That's why he had to be traded. So you're going to cry about it? In a good way, I mean?
There's no crying with hockey trades.
That came out with the wrong tone. You're going to cry about it like you want to fight? But I meant it in a good way.
Hey, by the way, I think Dan Ball has some Patriots acquisition updates.
Is it worth the breaking news sounder, fellas?
No. Unless it's not the one you handed me, which I was going to throw to the next hour because I was going to use it as a tease that would get people mad.
Okay. Well, when we come back here on WEEI Afternoons, Andy, what's coming up next?
We will tell you about the latest, not greatest, Patriots signing as they continue to bolster one side of the ball. I bet this is a name you never expected to hear among the Patriots free agent signings. That's up next here on WEEI Afternoons.